My name is Jamel, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really grateful to be here tonight. Sydney, thank you for asking me to speak. It's definitely an honor to be asked to speak at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I walked into this program on March 16th, 2010, someone sat up somewhere and told a story, and I don't know whether or not I heard it, but it saved my life in some way. And if I can just get up, show up, and give back, that's a miracle, because I wasn't able to do that the day before I got sober, or any of the other days before that in the 12 years that I was drinking and the last 8 years when I was using drugs. Showing up is a really important part of my program today, and having you in my life is the other most important part of my program, because I can't do it alone, and this is a we program, and people that I've seen try to do it alone for any amount of time just aren't as successful as those of us who just do it together. So if I need to say one thing that's of most importance, besides not picking up under any circumstances, it's definitely to maintain a life that involves people that are sober, because alone is a dangerous place to be, especially for an alcoholic, trying to recover from a disease that likes to keep you alone and isolated, taking opposite actions that aren't the good ones. Today it's about we and not about me. So my story is the story that you helped me create in sobriety. But the one that I'm going to tell you quickly is the one that alcohol created for me. So I had a blackout about 1998 that was so bad it took me a few days to recover. In this way of living, that would be my last drink. That should have been my last drink, because I don't even know how I got home. The night before I got sober, I was drinking the same way. I was in a blackout that was only kind of aided by drugs, you know? So I could have been passed out somewhere, but because I was on drugs, I was just like spinning around in some place. And I didn't stop spinning until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to make sure that I talk about the things that I do to stay sober a day at a time, because I listen to qualifications and I love to identify with the drinking and the vomiting and the losing things and the not showing up and the, you know, all the other things that happen to alcoholics when they put the drink in their system. But really that doesn't keep me sober at all. That just reminds me why I need to do this other stuff in order to stay sober. It's very important that I tell both sides of my story. And for me, the most important part of my story is my recovery. So every day I wake up, I pray, I read some AA literature, I meditate, I call three people a day. If you know me, you know that my theory is that if I call three people every day on the worst day of my sobriety, I might have the strength to call one that'll save my life. I call my sponsor every day without fail, because that's what I was told would help me to stay sober. And just for some random reason, I listened to it, and it has worked. I have sponsees, so I pick up their calls. I pick up other people's calls. I call back. I try not to live in a text world, because if I can't hear your voice and you can't hear mine, then I might be able to bullshit my way through a conversation. Because I'm really great at texting and writing. They pay me to do it sometimes. I could tell you that the world is an amazing place, and I could be in like the darkest of spots. But I can't really do that over the phone, because I'm not that skilled at lying in that way. And I really try to make sure that I go to a meeting a day. You know, more if I need it, but at least one, so that it becomes uncharacteristic of me to miss a meeting. That it's not routine, that missing meetings is not a part of my sobriety. It's not like, oh, you know, I went 7 days without a meeting. And if that's your story, that's cool for you. But for me, it's a little too cool. I need like the warmth of Alcoholics Anonymous, like the heat. Because if you don't stay close to the center of Alcoholics Anonymous, then I heard that, like, you know, you could get picked off that people on the outskirts are picked off and people in the center are not. And so I do these things every single day. I've been doing them for however many days I've been sober, because I'm trying to live, stay alive, and enjoy like sobriety. Not necessarily a great life. I just enjoy living on life's terms. So let me get into today, because today's the most important day of my sobriety. Like, yesterday doesn't count. March 16th doesn't really count. Just today, because everything I've learned up until today, I have to apply today, or else I might pick up a drink, or I might not really believe any of the shit that I'm telling you right now. And so the way my day started out, after prayer, after meditation, after calling someone to talk about something that was bothering me, because secrets can just destroy everything, I got a phone call from my sponsor to tell me that he relapsed, and he apologized to me because he felt like he'd done something wrong to me. And what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is a few things, but one of the most important ones is that, like, you don't do anything to me, and that I have to be there for you when you need me. So I just told him that, you know, he didn't do anything and that I was here for him. So instantly, my relationship with this man that's been helping to save my life since I had 4 months sober turned into one where I could just be of service to him and listen to what he had to say and to let him know that we could make a meeting together and just do all the things that I know that I need to do in order to keep me sober so that I can help him stay sober when he needs it, when he wants it, when he can get it. And it's not so easy for me to say that. You know, I've been walking around all day. I spoke at a meeting at 12:30. I felt like God must have known that today was going to be one of the most challenging days of my life and that I needed to be speaking so that I wouldn't even have an opportunity to sit on the other side of this meeting and not put my hand up and share because I was ashamed or afraid, or I just thought I could deal with it myself. So if I have one other thing to say, is if you're sitting in one of those seats and you think that you have something on your chest that you can deal with by yourself, just don't even bother. You know, get your hand up, share it, pull someone to the side, talk about it, but don't keep the shit to yourself, because it can make you do something that can make you do something else, that can make you do something else, that can make you drink. And it might be next week. It might be next year. Right? Like, I don't know when keeping things to myself is going to come back to bite me in the ass. Like, I don't know. So I just don't do it. You know, I was in a meeting the other day holding these secrets, you know, like, oh, I think my girlfriend's gonna leave me. And those are the usual things that I can say out loud in a meeting with no problem. Like, I have no shame. When I put my hand up, it's only to save my life. Like, I'm not thinking about what you're thinking about or what you're thinking, because I don't care what you feel about what I'm feeling in here, because I know it's dangerous, so I put it out. I put it right out. But I was sitting in this meeting, and the speaker started off by talking about the three things that he'd been keeping secret because he thought he could handle them himself. And when he started talking, I was like, this guy just is forcing me to get my hand up and get honest. And I said that I thought my sponsor might not be sober in a room full of people that knew him. So I had to crush the fear. And it was the first time that I'd said it out loud, other than in a little tiny meeting where I knew it was safe to say. But I knew I had to say it in my home group because it needed to get out. Like, I knew just once wasn't enough. Like, this was a big thing. Like, I had to think about what I was doing and what I was going to do and how I was going to make sure that I was strong enough to stay sober, whether or not my sponsor stayed sober, because he did teach me that my ultimate sponsor was God. So I needed to use you to get back to God in order to keep me sober. So with that said, that's where I'm at today. I have an interim sponsor because I'm always careful about my sobriety, and I know that things happen because we're dealing with alcoholism, and it's cunning, it's baffling, and it's powerful. But like I also said, that it's those things when you're by yourself, and that's when it's a danger. But when I'm in the center, and my best friend knows, and this person knows what's going on with me, then they can watch me, they can hold me up, and they can keep me honest. Because honesty is the thing that keeps me sober, because I'm like, I wear lies like nice clothes, right? Like, I have many, and they all look good. But they're all dangerous. So now that I've said that, I mean, what do I want to tell you about me and sobriety and before sobriety? I had many things happening to me before I got sober. A lot of dangerous things, right? I blacked out when I drank. I caused trouble when I drank. I stole things when I drank. And actually, before I drank, I was stealing things. Like, before I was like this hopeless alcoholic drug addict who stole things just because it was already like a part of me. I was like a high school student that had everything you needed to have but would steal your book bag. You know, I would steal your tie. I would steal your blazer and wear it because it was a particular name brand and I had every other thing in that name brand, so you couldn't really question whether I stole it or not. Like, that's the person that I was before I became this raging alcoholic. So, like, alcohol was just the thing that I found that kind of gave me an excuse to be who I already was. You know, I already wanted to be angry. I already wanted to be wild. I already wanted to not do the thing that I was raised to do, which was like show up, be honest, be respectful, be as loving as I could be. It was like alcohol allowed me to like do the opposite of everything that I was like born to do. So those were my defects. With alcohol added in, they became worse. You know, I lost jobs, I lost girlfriends, I lost friends, I burned bridges, I helped put some of them back together just to burn them right down again. I wasn't really a great older brother because I just wasn't there. I couldn't show up for anything. Holidays, like, you know, I could disappear all my family for quite a while. The only people who knew where I was were like the people that I was like drinking and drugging with. They always knew where they could find me. You could find me at this place around 12 a.m. You could find me at this place around 2 a.m. And if you really knew me well, you could find me at this place at 2 p.m. still raging into the next day. That's how I drank. You know, hospitals. I landed in the psych ward for 8 days. I missed a very important funeral during that time. You know, I was like waiting for this funeral. I need to go. It's like one of my close friends, and I'm in a hospital, in a psych ward, looking out of a window that I could see my street, but I couldn't get there because I was stuck in that. Right? And then I get out of the psych ward in a miraculous 8 days because I'm so convincing that they let me out and they give me this medication and I never took while I was in there. I took it one day and I was like, this is not for me. And I would like hide it under my tongue and I would just everything you could do not to take it. And as soon as I got out, I'm popping these pills, sharing them, drinking. You know, it's like my alcoholism just likes to do things on its own terms and in bad ways all the time. So, you know, I was in an institution. I found myself in handcuffs, coming out of blackouts, not knowing what I did, and then being told that, like, you know, hey, you peed in the train tracks and you don't have any ID with you. And so now I'm in this holding cell, and that wasn't the first time. Or I'm coming to in a hospital with, like, a gash on my head because I'd fallen in the street, and my mind is so, as it says in the book, like magic and magnifying, that I thought maybe I'd been in this hospital and no one knew who I was, so I'm just gonna get dressed and zip on out of here like everything's okay until I get the, you know, that bill in the mail, and I'm like, oh, they got me. again. Because that really happened. It really did. It really did. Or, you know, I travel to the West Coast. I'm supposed to be there for 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. I'm there 2.5 months. I'm doing all types of things with alcohol plus the other things that my disease likes to... likes to bring along for the ride. You know, and then I'm on the West Coast where I'd never been, right? I'm almost jumping off balconies because I drink and I like to use these other psychedelic drugs and I use too much of everything that I pick up. So I'm an alcoholic, but there's no like, okay, maybe AA is not for me and the drinking, I'm not gonna drink, I'm just gonna smoke a little weed and do a little of this, because I don't do a little bit of anything, especially my recovery. I don't do a little bit of recovery because that doesn't work. So if you're doing a little bit of recovery, you might want to do a little more, because it's funny, but it's not that funny. Because when a guy with 5 years sober calls you and tells you that he relapsed, then you know that's not funny. It's great to be able to laugh, but it's really not funny, because I thought for the past few days that my sponsor would be dead unless he got honest. And I prayed this morning that God helped him to be honest with someone else, because that's the only thing I knew could save his life. It wasn't going to be me saying, hey, I think you're drinking and using drugs. It was going to be him saying, I've been drinking and using drugs. Like, that's what got me sober. Everyone else knew that I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. It was me. When I sat in a meeting and I got my hand up and I said, my name is Jamel, I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, that's when I got free, because that's when I got honest. And that's when I knew I needed to listen. I don't even know if I knew, but I just had a feeling that maybe now I better listen because I'm home safe. It's like I slid into home when I should have been out bases ago, years ago. I should have been dead. So the last thing that happened to me before I got sober that I always like to talk about, because it's very important for me to remember exactly where I'm going to go, is I was on this 24, 36-hour binge. As usual, wasn't that. That wasn't the thing that, I don't say it because that wasn't a big deal. 3 days, that's like, that was nothing. That was like, all right, hey, we did it for 3 days. That's so cool. Today, I just wonder, it's like, I wouldn't even stay up for 24 hours straight if you paid me, just because I feel like I have to get some sleep. But anyway, so I'm on this binge, and I decide that it's time for me to go home. How much time? Okay, we're done. Okay. We're going to get right back in here. We're going to talk about some spirituality in here, too. So, I'm on this bench. I'm ready to go home. I'm in a club. I say to myself, it's time to leave. I get out of there. I jump on the train. I come to from this blackout, and I fell under the train track. So I hit my head. I come to. I jump on. I, like, jump up. I can still vaguely remember me jumping up, putting my arm onto the platform, climbing up out of hell, making it home, coming to after my little drunk coma nap, turning on the television, and finding out that a woman jumped down into the train to get her bag and got run over by the train. And I swear to you, on that day, I looked at it. This was on New York One. I was like, no more drugs and alcohol. I said it. But it was the same thing I'd been saying for 12 years. Like, this is it. No more. I'm going to stop. And then 2 days later, I was right back out in the street, in the club, with a hat on, covering up my bruises. You know, still, like, my delusion, it was so big that, like, people were worried about me to my face, not behind my back. And I was like, you know, whatever, don't worry about it. So I go, I keep going. I'm drinking more, I'm doing more drugs, I'm taking more risks. I'm pushing more people away, because this is the thing that alcohol helps me to do. It's, like, great at that, right? And then, just to get right out of that, I sent a text message to my best friend who has, you know, he's sober 60 days more than me. I asked him to take me to a meeting. He takes me to this big meeting on 60th and Park. It's called the Atlantic Group. I didn't know what was going on in that meeting. I didn't hear anything, right? I didn't hear a thing. I couldn't hear. Until they get to this part where people are standing up and then they're going through sobriety countdowns. And I hear it. However, I must have said I had a day. And I had someone else, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, whatever many days, 30 days, 60, 90, then it gets to months, and then it gets to a year, and then it gets to 2, 3, 10, 20, 30, 40, there might have been someone in there with like 50 some odd years, and I believed in that. Like, I really believed it. I don't know why. Thank you. I don't know why I believed it, but I believed it. And then these miracles started happening. So I come downstairs after the meeting, and my good friend, still one of my best friends till this day, buys me a big book. No, he introduces me to my other new best friend, who buys me a big book. He pushes me off to the side. This guy's your sponsor. Take his number, right? They take me out to eat. I had a meal. I didn't drink. I had a laugh. We jumped in a car. We went up to 79th Street Workshop, 10 o'clock. Boom, got my hand up. I'm an alcoholic. I'm free. Next day, call sponsor. Day after, call sponsor. Every day, go to a meeting. 90 days, I did 200 some odd meetings. I didn't know about the 90 and 90 because I was living in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was living in the meetings. I was safe. I did the steps. I had a service commitment. I still have a service commitment today. I have one. And that is one. I mean, I used to have a lot sometimes, but I have at least one. I have to be able to show up somewhere all the time, at least one place, right? I have a home group. I've always had a home group. I've had several places that you can find me. I like that I can walk into this meeting and know people. Everywhere I go, I like know someone in Alcoholics Anonymous, like on the street, on airplanes, in Puerto Rico, at meetings, everywhere I go. Everywhere. I was walking here, ran into like a sober. I think it was when I was walking here. It could have been earlier today, but I was like, they're everywhere, everywhere. My first job, I walked in. It's like, sober person, sober person. I was like, what? This is great, right? Only because I embrace Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I love you guys no matter what. Even if I don't like you, I love you. So if I see you, there's a love there, right? So if I'm frowning or I look a little off, I still love you. And if you ask me for help, my hand is there. I'm there. Right? Because I know that I'm going to need to do that in order to ask you for help. I mean, my story and your story is the same. Our recoveries can be the same as long as we're trying to recover actively. Like, you can't rest on laurels. I know I can't. Maybe you can. I want to speak for me. I can't rest on any laurels because I'm an alcoholic who likes to eat mushrooms, who likes to sniff cocaine, who likes to do Special K, who likes to take strange pills that he doesn't know what they are because it's so late and I'm so drunk. Anything feels better than just being drunk, so let me put something else in my body. Like, that's me. So if I'm at 5, 6, 7 different meetings, like knowing everyone, it's because I have to pick people up the same way that I picked up drinks. And I need more of you. And I need to get closer to you. And I have to be able to be even more honest with you and you and you, just in case I have this thought that I can drink again. Because that is the thought that can kill me, or that's the thought that might have me pick up a drink and then keep me away from Alcoholics Anonymous for years and years because I'm ashamed. Like, I can't have shame in this room. I've done things in sobriety that I wouldn't ever have thought I would do because I thought I was done with the work. And I learned that I'm never done with the work. I'm never done with the work. And I'm never, ever, ever done with you. Because if I'm done with you, then that means I'm done with this. Like, this is magic to me. That I didn't drink today is magic. It's like a magic. And I only got it from you. I didn't get it on my own. I wouldn't even be here. I know I got it from you. So let's just keep up the magic. Thanks.